are listening to the Fundamentalist Podcast.
Until the light takes us, am I right, Bog?
Oui.
Hello, one and all. Welcome into the Fundamentalists Podcast. I'm your host, Dual Guest, joined as always by the lovable duo of Richard Donahue and Peter Bog. On this episode, we are doing another edition of Hammer of the Underworld, where we are putting a spotlight on the best and brightest and unfortunately oft overlooked portion of the heavy metal world. We're going to be featuring releases from Dawn Raid, Hell Ripper, Cattle Decapitation, and more. We'll also be telling you what we've been listening to in the underground sense, as well as taking a retrospective on the DC death metal documentary Underground Civilization. All this and more on this Hammer of the Underworld edition of the Fundamentalist Podcast. Let us start off by saying welcome, gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. Been a little while since we recorded. How you been doing?
We're doing all right, man. I made it through another Mardi Gras and I'm still alive, so I think it's worth celebrating.
Absolutely. Donahue?
I'm doing much better. I think this cold's mostly gone. So I think it's just my throat now instead of my nose, which is an improvement in and of itself.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. So let's get things started. Richard, tell us what you've been listening to. Give us your most cult picks of this last few weeks.
All right. So the past few weeks, I'm kind of focusing on getting some more underground shit to my collection and, recently, the first Demolition Hammer came in, album came in today, Torch to Existence from Canada. It took like a fucking month to get here, but it's just a phenomenal record. It's a little more raw than their second record, Epidemics of Violence, but still songs like a 44 caliber brain surgery, crippling velocity, and infectious hospital waste rip just as hard back then as they do now. From there, I went to Morbid Saint, who are that was underground for sure. Someone categorized them as black thrash because the vocals are kind of screechier and thrashier side, but the music is straight up thrash metal. So if you want to call them black thrash, what the fuck would I call them? But it's their sole single release, Spectrum of Death, which is a fucking banger start to finish. My favorite tracks would be the first track, Lock Up Your Children, track 4, Damien, and track 7, Scars. Something else I've been jamming recently is Sinister, who is a tier 4 with about 24-6 monthly listens on Spotify. These dudes are very underrated European death metal band that I'd say probably in that second tier, don't quite get the love that Entombed, Grave, bands of that caliber do. But it's just great songwriting. The bass is super punchy in it, and songs very memorable. And the solos, honestly, they had a little more pizzazz, a little more memorable than your average death metal solos, which is a little refreshing. The album's Diabolical Summonings. Favorite tracks would be the first track, Sadistic Intent. Track 3, the title track, and the 5th song, Leviathan. And finally, I've been on a bit of an old school grindcore kick lately and listening to Repulsion's Horrified, who are a tier 4 with about 17,600 monthly listens. It's Horrified is their sole album they ever put out. And it can get a bit samey. I mean, it's like 20-something songs. But if you're in that mood for raw nastiness, it's pretty hard to beat.
Fun Repulsion fact, about 2 years ago in Las Vegas, I was tripping hard on mushrooms the final day of Psycho Las Vegas, and I watched Repulsion's entire set. I do not recommend mushrooms in grindcore.
Yeah, same thing with speed and doom metal. Not a good idea. But my favorite songs off Horrified would be the first song, Stench of Death, track 4, Slaughter of the Innocent, track 8, Festering Boils, and track 13, Bodily Dismemberment. Pete, what have you listened to as of late?
So let's see here. I've been listening a lot to Woods 5 from the Woods of Ypres, and I kind of go back and forth. I know that Duel had said that he's sort of in the same boat as to whether or not I think Woods 4 or Woods 5 is my favorite Woods of Ypres record. I'm a big fan of Woods 3, too. I love some of that black part of it, but I think that there's just a melancholiness on Woods 5 that is really you know, is the backdrop for what people speculate was David Gold's suicide. I posted some of this to the Slack channel, but when I was sort of scrounging around the internet forums, a lot of people point to the fact that he had been dating one of the members of Kitty, and apparently she had found out, purportedly, as this person posted on Reddit, that he had been cheating on her with multiple women for quite some time, and then he killed himself sometimes later. And so that was pretty crazy for me to hear, considering a lot of people sort of speculate the role that, what's her name, Bella Knox, or I don't know, what was the name of the webcam girl that Trevor Strand started dating before he sort of bit the big bazooka, as Richard Donahue has put it in the past. So I don't know. It's just it's disappointing to see that potentially these great men took themselves out of the picture for relationship concerns. Anyways, that aside, Love Woods 5, one of my all-time favorite Woods tracks. Traveling Alone is off of that one. I still say that it's pretty much the best thing that they ever did. I know that Duel disagrees, but there's a lot of great tracks.
If my webcam was on, you'd see me shaking my head right now. But
144 monthly listeners, so that puts them in tier 3. But, you know, still ask your average metalhead about Woods of Ypres, and I don't think that everybody is going to be as well-versed as those of us who did an entire episode on it. Something else that I listened to, and I'm just going to talk about this really quickly, but I started following this band, Wake, who was touring with Wayfarer on their past U.S. tour that they just did. And I got I thought that they released new music, but it was actually a remix of a track that they had put out in 2002 called Vast and Infinite. And it's like an electronic remix of like a atmospheric grind track. Like, it's just one of the strangest things that I've heard in such a long time. Like, but I've been seeing this more and more, is like the idea of a remix is sort of a way to sort of keep the content flowing, you know, into our phones and our updates constantly. Have you guys run into these like remixes of metal tracks very often? I feel like I'm seeing them more.
I don't run across them too often, but I would agree that they are becoming a little bit more in vogue. It, like Ghost, I feel like has the most that I've seen. I think Carpenter Brute, that DJ, did more than a couple for their Prequel album, specifically Dance Macabre. That was really popular for a while.
You know, that sounds kind of cool, actually. I'm not familiar with those ones, but I feel like I actually want to go back and listen to that one. So, anyways, that brought me to taking a listen to the entire album that song Vast and Infinite is off of, which is Thought Form Descent from 2002 from Wake. Wake is 19,000 listeners, so that puts them as a tier 4 band, monthly listeners, according to Spotify. They're from Alberta, Canada, and I would say that this album has more than a passing resemblance to Ulcerate. Maybe with more grind influence, and the vocals themselves are a little bit more blown out. So overall, I actually really enjoyed it, although it took a little bit of getting into. There's a really cool clean track in here that I enjoyed quite a lot. My note here says that it's not just another rehash of the Call of Cthulhu, which is always refreshing, especially for a band like this that's pretty pummeling. I think that you kind of need that gasp of air. So I think that they executed that really well. Standout tracks are Swallow the Light, Parade Doily, I'm going to edit out that because I don't know how the fuck to pronounce that word, and Observer to the Master. Another one that I just took a look at really quick, this was something that was recommended to me on Bandcamp on the top of their metal releases, but it was The Falling Tide from 2002 from Woods of Desolation. I think I was thinking about Woods of Ypres, and so I said this is kind of an interesting naming schematic that they've gone ahead and used. But these guys, unfortunately, they're basically just Sunbather, you know, from somebody there from Death Heaven with a really bizarre vocal styling on top of it. It's a little bit reminiscent to, do you guys remember that band Bostonage? It's kind of like hardcore emotional wailing. It's not really what I would characterize as a particularly typical metal vocal on top of this very, you know, sort of glitzy, jangly, atmospheric
black
metal.
So it's Ghostbath.
Well, so it's funny here. I have a note that says the guy from Ghostbath seems more convincing regarding the vocals. I actually have that written down here. So, yeah, in some ways it is a lot like Ghostbath, although I actually would say that I prefer Ghostbath to this Woods of Desolation record. So anyway,
this kind of wail, like your skin being peeled off style of vocal.
That sounds like cooler. Yeah, it's almost like Black Tusk, if you guys know that, guys. I was just going to say that it's bizarre. That's all I was going to say about it. It's, you know, there are some, you know, instrumentally, this band is on and they, you know, do what they do really well. But it's just, to me, you know, maybe that's part of their concept, is the contrast between the vocals and what's happening with the instrumentation. But I personally don't believe it. They didn't really sell that to me. So for whatever that's worth, standout tracks off of this one, The Falling Tide from 2002, Illumination, The Passing, and then the final track off of that one is Anew. Again, that's 19,000 listeners, tier four. And then my super cult pick, I went back and took a look. Last time I did this exact same thing, but I looked at the Fortress Festival tour poster, and I went all the way down to the bottom and noticed a band that I actually had some familiarity with, which is Old Corpse Road. 171 monthly listeners. So these guys are tier five, which is too bad because I think that they have almost four records come out. This record, On the Ghastly Shores Lay the Wreckage of Our Lore from 2020. Pretty awesome.
Could there be a more apt description for someone who lives in the realms of obscurity?
Yeah. So it's an hour and 6 minutes, and it's, I would say, definitely a step or two more towards a symphonic black metal scheme from a band like Woden's Throne, or, you know, I mean, we're talking about the same thing. If you're familiar with Winterfileth or that kind of English black metal scene, I'm calling it a scene loosely. It's basically they're all from the UK, but it has kind of a similar sound. The vocals on this one get a little goofy in that they can be like a little chanty. And so I think that potentially it's like a little bit folksy. There's a big pipe organ on the ship called the Black there's a big pipe organ section on a track called The Black Ships, which I do consider to be one of the standouts on that one. I posted the picture on the Slack channel of these guys, and I said, when you're dead but you still might need to meet the queen at any moment, because it's them basically all flexing in these kind of funny like suit vests with corpse paint on. Pretty goofy, but I'm a fan of these guys. You should definitely go check out Old Corpse Road. And in particular, I'll say it again, On the Ghastly Shores Lay the Wreckage of Our Lore. And that's been pretty much it for me.
I've also been plumbing the depths of the tier five, shall we say. The first band I want to talk about comes to us from Spain, a very often overlooked country when it comes to metal. This band comes to us from the Basque. They are called Nuclear Revenge, with a whopping total of 268 monthly listeners. Their album Dawn of the Primitive Age, at first glance, is just more thrash metal that you've heard 100 times before. But there's a lot of fun here. There's some new wave of British heavy metal influences. There's some really fun tracks on here, mostly March of the Undead. Dead, the title track Dawn of the Primitive Age, as well as Descending Wings of Perversion. You don't often hear thrash metal from Spain, or really metal from Spain at all. So it was a refreshing take, I should say. Plenty of stuff you've heard before, but there's also more than enough surprises that it merits a listen. The second band is also very, very thrash, very, very satanic thrash. Black thrash, if you will. However, they are a little bit more successful, coming in at 1,129 monthly listeners. This is Terror Hammer, coming to us from the frozen landscapes of Serbia. Now, for any of you long trench-coated drug dealers selling the crocodile, this is how you sell yourself: blackened necro spreed. This is how the band self-describes themselves, and it's like, yes, I read that, and it was instantly like, add to queue, listening to the album right now. The album is called Gateways to Hades. It was released in 2022. And much like Nuclear Revenge, at first glance, it's just more thrash, black thrash that you've heard before, with plenty of tongue in cheek. Transylvanian Whore and Blizzard of Blood is stuff that you've heard before, but there's some really awesome leads on tracks like Tronized Goatmaster or Inside the Nuclear Tomb. Really, really fun stuff.
I'm sorry, Duel, can you say that Goatmaster thing one more time? Because that sounded incredible.
Tronized, T-R-O-N-I-Z-E-D. I have no idea what the I've never read that word before in my life. Tronized. I don't know if it's like a mechanized, like they're basically saying it's like a robot. Robot.
Oh, Goatmaster, like a Tron. Got it.
Yeah, that's what I took from it anyway. Going right back to Nuclear Revenge, because I forgot my favorite part, and that's the fucking the nicknames for all the people in the band. Usually that's for like black metal, but we got Speed Hammer on drums, very appropriate. Cryptic Aggressor, amazing name, on vocals and guitars. Pestilence Breeder, also on guitars, and
and
Skull Reaper on bass. I mean, everyone's lining up to fuck those dudes, come on. Last but not least, it is also a thrash act. However, this is progressive thrash metal, technical thrash metal, if you will. Currently signed to Redefining Darkness Records, Paranorm comes to us from the lovely location of Uppsala, Sweden. And they have an average monthly listener count of 823. The album I'm highlighting today is called Empyrean. And quite frankly, it's an overlooked masterpiece. From start to finish, I was immediately drawn in. The songs are straight up earworms, which you would not necessarily associate with anything technical or progressive, unless it's at the highest forms of the genre, like Obscura. But the riffs, while being technical, are super, super catchy, super melodic. They stay with you. There's some really big hooks on the record. This band should be more well known than they are. This album was released on February 26, 2021. I had never heard of it before. And the way I found it was I was going through reels on Instagram and found just some random obscure fucking video that had one of their songs, the first track, Critical Mass, on it. And I was like, what the fuck is that? That sounds awesome. And led me down the rabbit hole. And sure enough, the whole record is awesome. That's Empyrean from Paranorm. Check that shit out. Let's move on now. That's going to do it for what we've been listening to. This next segment of the show is we want to put a spotlight on any underground releases that have come out since we last recorded. That can include singles, EPs, or albums. I want to start off with Dawn Raid. On the first edition of Hammer of the Underworld, we highlighted their single Ancient Light, the first off their upcoming album, To Know the Light, which will be released in March 24th, 2023. Since the last recording, they've also released the single The Battle of Sudden Flame, which is their letter to all policemen. Read that with a heavy dose of sarcasm. And most recently, they've released a track called Go As Free Companions. Black metal and Lord of the Rings references go together like coffee and milk. Inject it into my veins. I'm a big fan of these three singles that have come out so far. I've grown to like the accordion and the other folk instrumentation that is incorporated into Dawn Raid's music. Really, really interested to hear what comes next for the rest of this record. Also, wanted to give a shout out to Hellripper. They just released their most recent album, Warlocks, Grim, and Withered Hags. Don't want to say too much about it because there will definitely be a review of that album on our upcoming reviews pod. Also, Cloak, awesome black and roll band from Atlanta, Georgia, currently signed to Season of Mist, has just released the first single from their upcoming new release, Black Flame Eternal. The single is called Invictus, and it's another tasty slice of the black and roll we have all come to know and love from this band. And last but not least, at least for me, is the first single from Cattle Decapitation's new album, Terracite, and it's entitled We Eat Our Young. And I believe Fogg has some initial thoughts on it.
You know, I really like the track a lot, although I would say it's pretty solidly a death metal song. There wasn't like a ton of unexpected sort of grind influence, but maybe I'm just saying that because I was listening to it in the mix of also listening to that Wake record, which certainly had a little bit more raw parts of it. But I would say overall it was, you know, probably a very listenable and approachable Cattle Decap song. I mean, that band's star is certainly rising with their excellent release from 2019, Death Atlas, is that right, Duel?
Yes.
On the date, which was a fantastic record, and certainly saw Travis Ryan doing
it. Was good. Shut the fuck up, Richard. It was a masterpiece.
It was overrated.
Anyways, y'all should check out Death Atlas. But We Eat Our Young, I want to say I'm excited for Terracite. The album art for the new single is really pretty compelling. It almost looks like a sculpture. Like when you look really close to it, there's so many details that makes me wonder if it is a picture of something that is actually created or if it's, you know, probably more likely CGI, but it's basically like this weird bug-like monster. It was a little bit reminiscent of the prawns from, what was that movie, Section 8 or Section 9? Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yes, District 9.
Yeah,
District 9,
yeah.
Neil Blomkamp.
Anyways, We Eat Our Young, like I said, approachable Cattle Decapitation, so I think that everybody should go out and take a listen to it. Certainly sounds like they're still tuned to B, so they're, you know, sticking true to their guns, and I'm excited to see what the hell else is coming.
Regarding that cover art, apparently, in the lore of Cattle Decapitation, Death Atlas was the extinction event of the all anthropoids on the planet, but they took inspiration from the saying that, like, you know, cockroaches would survive anything on the planet, whether it's like, you know, war, famine, nuclear annihilation. And so the human beings apparently all died, and in its place these humanoid cockroach type creatures have emerged, and in the band's lore they now run the planet, hence the Terracite.
Interesting.
Well, I look forward to us all having a exoskeleton at some point. And
I know that sounds tight as fuck.
Fuck yeah.
Can you sew patches to an exoskeleton? That's what I need to know.
These are the burning questions I need to know.
That's right. That's fucking right. Boys, do y'all have any recent singles or albums that came out that you wish to shine a spotlight on before we move on into the DC death metal documentary Underground Civilization?
You know, I question whether or not shouting it out, because I actually haven't listened to it, but I did post that Enslaved went ahead and released a new record, and I haven't listened to it yet, so I don't know what to say about that, but I'm curious, because I think previously I had said that some of the singles that came out from their previous EP, Planets, or Caravans of the Outer Planets, or was a little bit of a change in musical direction, even for them, a band that's already gone through a pretty pronounced change in musical direction. So we'll see what the hell this album's going to be like. Also, I just want to say, damn, they're prolific, man. They never stop churning out music. I mean, they must just be in the studio all the time.
Indeed. Last thing I want to shout out, it's technically not a new release because it's a live album, but it's one of my favorite bands, so I'm going to do it anyway. Ulthe, the Kings of Black Metal, in the year 2023, IMO, just released a live album called Live at Soul Crusher 2022. And it's not available on Spotify, so I can't give you any metrics to determine whether it's tier 4 or tier 5, but this band's very firmly tier 4, lower end of tier 4. It's only available at Bandcamp, from what I see. Maybe you can find it on YouTube Red. That's a question for Bog.
I actually have two records I'd highlight. One's a new release, and one's a reissue, so technically newer. But the first one is, the name of the band is Eat the Decay. The album's called Nefarious Means. It's not on Spotify. It's on Bandcamp, YouTube, place like that. But it's just really killer, ripping death grind from Texas. So it's cassette only so far. The CD's coming out. There's a vinyl coming out. So, and
for those who can't see, Richard just held the cassette up to the webcam.
Ooh, cassette, yeah. Cult.
Yeah. And the second one is a band I've discussed before, Molested, from Norway. And it's a reissue of their Stormvold EP and their demos from Blood Drum, as well as their Stalker demo from 92. So that's phenomenal stuff, especially the EP. The demos are more just the demos that would later become songs from Blood Drum. But that was put out by Dark Symphonies. And looking into them, I didn't realize they're from Billerica, Massachusetts, which is like 30 minutes away from where I live. So that's pretty cool. They always get permission from the bands, and they'll get like interviews and stuff, like pictures, liner notes for the band. So they do it all by the, you know, give the bands the respect and the money they deserve, which I think is really killer. But that's my picks.
Very, very nice. If you have any picks, let us know at the Fundamentalist Podcast Facebook page or on Instagram. You can also send us an email to thefundamentalistpodcast@gmail.com. Maybe you have your band you want to share with us. We'll definitely like to listen to it and give it a shout here on Hammer of the Underworld. Coming up next, after this break, we're going to take a look at the documentary Underground Civilization.
We just, you know, we took LSD, we took cocaine, we took vast amounts of marijuana. It was fun at the time, but then we all just sort of thought this ain't a very good idea anymore.
So you have a more stable life now?
No.
You know, Duel, I go back and listen to the older episodes, and there was that section of time where you were dubbing in all these bizarre, like, quotes from Phil. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Like the one about,
I don't know anything about that.
All I know is
our concerts are good.
Yeah, there's the one where he was like, it was him reenacting Dime offering who is it, Yngwie Malmsteen, a donut, right?
Yeah.
He's like, no, I don't want no fucking donut. Like, it's just
you can look that up on YouTube. It's like the best of Phil Anselmo, the funniest Phil Anselmo moments.
Oh,
it's amazing. Welcome back into the Fundamentalist Podcast. Let's go ahead and take a dive into the Fundamentalist Podcast Movie Club. It's been a long time since we've talked about a movie. So what was it?
I think it was a documentary for Vakken.
Vakken, yeah. I was going to say it's been a long time. I was thinking it might have been The Dirt, but I know it's been sooner than that. Anyway, we are back. This time we're going to be taking a look at a documentary that shines a light on the Washington, D.C. area and the surrounding regions, their local death metal scene in the late 80s and early 90s. This is called Underground Civilization. It focuses on bands like Deceased, Morbius, and with a couple other bands sprinkled in there as well.
Abominog.
Yeah, Abominog. But I would say they're a little bit of a bit player considering that the band breaks up, I feel like, within the first 40 minutes of the documentary. And they're really not featured all that much in it. It's like they get mentioned in passing and there's some members that get interviewed. And then about 40 minute mark, he's like, yeah, that's the end of Obamanog. And I was like, I thought you were leading up to something.
They're when they're in the studio recording a record, their guitarist went to Arizona and never came back.
Yes, yes, yes.
Dude, that's crazy. Like, I remember thinking about that, and like, they say that they still don't know what happened. Like, they never got an explanation. They never heard from the guy ever again. I mean, that's some crazy shit. What was he doing? You know, like, running, clearly running from the FBI, like, witness protection? Who knows? Like, really crazy.
I mean, it's like Whirl Dane's wife runs off and gets taken by a serial killer.
That's not right. Cold, and then we got that fire ass album that came out after that, right?
Dream of Neon Black. Such a banger, dude.
Anyway, if you want to learn about that, you can listen to our Under the Knife Nevermore. This is about DC death metal. Richard, you're the one who suggested that we watch this documentary. You watched it first. I'll let you lead off.
This just honestly came randomly as a YouTube suggestion and watched it. It was really compelling. I was aware of Deceased. I've actually seen them technically three times. The first two times I was really fucked up, so I don't really count that, but I saw them this past last November with Bulldozer and Aries Kingdom, and they put on a really good show. And King is just as charismatic live as is in this documentary, and really I would say he's the bread and butter, the foundation of this whole thing, is a lot of the footage and stuff is from him. But it highlighted a lot of bands I wasn't even aware of, like Morbius, Abominog, Sadistic Torment, Stoner, Doomstoner, something like that.
Corpse Grinder was a band that they shouted out a lot, which I had to pause to make sure that it was a group and they weren't actually talking about George Fisher, because I'm sure that they were, you know.
Doomstone, that was the name of the band, Doomstone. That was another band they mentioned somewhat. But it was pretty interesting, especially when they... they're talking about, I believe it's the Safari Club, where it's like no ID drinking, like 14-year-old kids going there, like getting smashed. Like it's right there in the DC ghetto. So they're like selling crack in the venue and just being very rough. Kind of reminded me of the Siberia days back when me and Mola used to go there all the time.
You know, we had a club in that rough. Yeah, I was going to say, we had a club in the Bay Area that was kind of on its last leg when I was, you know, among the thrash scene in the Bay Area, but it was called the Burnt Ramen, and it was very similar situation, which it was like, it was in Richmond, California, which is just a really, really rough, crime-ridden city at the foot of an oil refinery, and, you know, you had to drive into, like, the ghetto and, you know, park as close as you could to the door, and you just take your beer inside because, yeah, like, you could get robbed or something, you know, if you were hanging out, you know, smoking, etc. And so people would just smoke and drink in. They would sell, like, $2 Tecates, I think, to pretty much anybody who could, like, walk up to the bar and order them, you know. So it you know, I felt a little nostalgic about that, and it's kind of fun to hear that a lot of the sort of anarchy establishments are really what kept these scenes alive. You know, it really certainly was just a different heyday in metal. And I'm glad I at least got to see it, you know, from the outside a little bit as I was coming up. But, you know, you have to assume that there are places like that in pretty much every metro area that probably fostered a similar sort of aggressive, you know, music scene. I would really love to hear about other places in other metropolitan areas.
To that point, I feel like that's getting rarer and rarer, which might contribute to why underground scenes are getting smaller and smaller. The attention that's paid to some of the venues here in this documentary reminded me a little bit of the attention that was paid to Ruthie's Inn and the Murder in the Front Row documentary. It's almost just as much a documentary about that venue that made the scene possible as much as it is the bands that comprised it. And I think that's actually really cool. It's a bit sad that these days these sorts of venues are getting fewer and fewer, maybe because it's getting harder and harder to operate with impunity. Like Bog, you said, pretty much anybody who with $2 could walk up and get a Tecate, ID optional, I suppose. these days, you probably wouldn't be able to get away with that, but maybe it's these kind of, these establishments of sort of blasé attitudes toward things like that that require these scenes to kind of blossom the way they did. Because certainly in this documentary, some of these festivals that they put together, they just seem like a absolute clown shit going on. That one all day festival where it showed a picture of the yard, it was just Bud Light beer cans. Like you couldn't see the grass, it was just fucking beer cans.
That would be the death bash at that guy Dennis who played in Doomstone. Him and his brother's mom lived there, and it was mom's work, they could do whatever. So they would have these shows in the basement. So it's all these stacks of the bands playing in the middle of the pit, and then you know they're smoking PCP and all this other crazy shit. And I believe they said, I think King Fowl's have roughed this probably about 3,000 beer cans in one day. The frontman of Morbius said it was roughly like up to his waist, like 4 feet of just fucking beer cans for one event. That's insanity.
You know, was that the one, that festival where I can't remember which member it was? He said that they were driving over there with a keg in the back seat and they got pulled over. And,
yes.
and then he said that the cop ticketed him for everything and towed the car, but he let them keep the beer and he towed the car to the event. And so he said that he was riding in the car up on a truck bed with a keg in his lap. Like, what the fuck?
The coolest cop ever.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, I don't know. Yeah, that was wild. It sounded totally like anarchy. I mean, I've never spent time in the D.C. area, so I don't really, you know, have a firm characterization of what it was. But I've heard people say it's pretty rough. And watching this, I mean, it seemed like it was just absolute madness. I mean, these guys were just running wild, lighting shit on fire. Like you said, smoking PCP unironically. That was something that I had never heard of before.
But what was it? Not to speak disparagingly, some of these people are like some real fucking burnouts. What was the guy they called a butane for Pustulant Stench Records? They've talked about recording the demo in this guy's house. He's like, oh, who dropped the microphone? And it was just a massive piece of dog shit that was just on his floor. And he picked it up. I was like, oh, it's just a dog turd, and just drops it, keeps on going like nothing happened. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that was pretty intense. I love how they all speculated about why they called him butane, and then the one guy said they called him butane because he would huff butane and put the canisters before school every day and throw the canisters in his trunk. And so when you're driving around, you hear them all like clanging around. And what I liked is he was the lead singer that had the shirt that looked like his head had been cut off. Duel, you looked up his name before.
Jason Ware.
Yeah, Jason had said he characterized the high from huffing butane as hearing the helicopters in your ears, which I thought was pretty funny, but
yeah,
somewhat
like
articulate as well.
It's like doing whippets, and it is kind of like that. You get the what feeling, but I can only do a few of them at a time in my youth, and it always gave me a headache. I can't imagine the people who could do dozens upon dozens of them in a single night, what that would do to you after years and years and years. I guess we saw you just pick up dog shit thinking it's a microphone.
Yeah.
I wish we had found out what happened to butane. You know, like, where is that guy these days? I wanted him to participate in this documentary.
There was also, forget the guy's name, but he had the redneck brother with like the porno stash who he's at the Morbius show.
Pitmonger.
Doing, like,
is that what they call the guy? Pitmonger, right?
Yeah, Pitmonger. It was Pitmonger's brother who was on stage doing lead vocals for Morbius till they kicked him off. And he was just out of jail and got arrested that same the next night for stealing a mattress from a discount mattress store.
Absolute maniac. I love it. Doesn't paint the best picture of the scene, but I absolutely love it. Another highlight is this character B. He was just in the mall. He's like, the first time we ever met B, he was so violently high, he communicated in one word answers and grunts only. And when he showed up to audition, it was his friend who was there to actually audition, but he was a douche. But V could play and was cool, so B got the invite and the other guy was told to fuck off, essentially, even though B wasn't even there to audition. I thought that was pretty fucking funny.
I think one of the more like dramatic, I guess, shocking parts in a more serious sense was with the guitarist Doug of Deceased. They were leaving their fellow deceased guitarist Mark's house to go to, I believe it was their drummer's house, Larry, and they had a flat tire. So they pull off on the side of the road and it was like dusk. So Doug goes to get a flashlight to help change a tire, and a car comes down the hill on another side of the road, kills Mark, kills, I guess, the other guys that are with him too. So Doug doesn't know what's going on. He like runs after this van and sees his friends just fucking demolished, just dead, just pieces. I can imagine how horrifying it is. I imagine, because he was a teenager, so 17, 18. You know, shit like that, I imagine, never goes away. Like,
he says that in the documentary. That was very tragic. He's like, he still deals with that to this day. And
I mean, that's horrifying.
I mean, yeah, one by one, finding each of your friends like dead in various states of mangledment and dismemberment from getting annihilated by a car. That's one thing I wish that they had elaborate at all? Like, what happened to the guy who killed everyone? Did they catch the guy? Did he just get away? Like, what the fuck? Like, I'm assuming he was a drunk driver if he just sideswipes everyone and kills multiple people right then and there, you know?
Yeah.
Can't imagine. I'm sure there's some survivor's guilt there as well.
Oh, definitely.
It was a real moment of realness that in a documentary that was mostly, that was big on levity, I thought. Like, I was laughing at some of the shenanigans, like the beer drinking and the petty crime, and then just randomly in the center, there's this like tragic event. It seems a little bit misplaced, but important to tell nonetheless.
It's kind of awful to speculate a little bit about, but sometimes a tragedy can really kind of galvanize a group of people. And that's, it's the documentary kind of started with that event, and then it goes on to talk about all the different venues when they existed. And so I sort of saw that as a moment that, you know, firmly stamped like this sort of code of beliefs among this group of friends, especially since it was deceased early on. And like I said, or many of us have said, that King kind of ran the scene, which kind of brings me to the end of the movie, where there was this sort of speculation about whether or not he had been quote-unquote voted out of the scene.
Yeah, voted out of the scene.
And, you know, apparently that was an event they said, you know, happened, and then they talked to all these people, and they were like, how would that have worked? Like, we all, you know, we all met under a bridge, like, you know, secretly at night, and, like, cast our ballots to vote King out of the scene. It kind of seemed like, you know, he had just pissed off enough people for being just kind of an arrogant, you know, drunken asshole for so long. And then when he talks about it, it related to his beef with the guy from the Jack's music venue. He said he fucked a swordfish is what he said. But then, like, he said what he actually did was got like a bunch of fish steaks and like rubbed his dick on him. And then he like threw him at the owner, right? And into the mosh pit.
Yeah.
Like, just one of the most bizarre things that I've ever heard in terms of like a revenge act. Like, I just don't even know where that came from. But, you know, if you watch all the drugs at that point, to quote the gentleman with the quite long beard, that was a lot of drugs ago.
One of the women in the documentary was quoting the first time she met King. She was at a Black Sabbath show on their Dehumanizer tour, and she was talking about how basically he was just a drunk, obnoxious asshole throughout the whole show. So, I mean, as charismatic as he is now in this documentary, 30 years ago on a belly full of beer and youthful exuberance, he might have been an insufferable prick.
Yeah,
I would totally believe it.
In some of those, in some of that footage, which, by the way, I made the comment in the pregame that I'm pretty sure the reason this thing exists is because somebody had all of this footage, you know, hours and hours worth of this concert footage. And that was kind of one of the best parts, actually, of the documentary, is that they interviewed all these people who would cite specific shows, and then they actually had footage from the shows. Back to the one at the old Siberia Club where they actually ripped the ceiling out. Because it was so low, and somebody punched it, and then all of the paneling and the lights and stuff started to fall down into the pit, and they basically just started demolishing it. But I in the young footage of King, I have a note here that says he has a more than passing resemblance to Paul Bailoff. I don't know if you guys,
I kind of got that
about
actually.
That, but it was sort of like the wedge haircut, you know, and like you know, just sort of like the crop tops and like the armbands and stuff, you know,
more in a passing resemblance and personality as well.
One of the best quotes that King does describing the early days of deceased would be smoke PCP, kill posers, and play the craziest shit ever. Which there needs to be a shirt with that on it.
Again, deceased sounds like Paul Bailoff. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can find this documentary on YouTube for free. The people who made it have it on there, so you don't have to worry about, you know, taking money out of amateur filmmakers' pockets or anything like that. The cool thing, though, is if you go to the YouTube page for Blue Ibis Films, the people who make this documentary and some of the main players in it, such as King himself, King Fowley, are in the comment section responding to people. And I think that's really cool with some of their questions. Bog, your favorite YouTube channel, Circle of Tone, is in the comments saying, awesome, hell of a time to be alive, shared. They thank him for sharing, and he's like, this is what the underground should do, modern tape trading. Good guy, Circle of Tone. There's this other question about how the hell did Ex Mortis and Dying Fetus, obviously two of the bigger bands from, I guess, that whole area, get omitted? And apparently those bands were considered standoffish, kind of prickly, i.e. not friendly, which is kind of funny coming from a guy who was voted out of the scene. So maybe there's more to that story.
Yeah, I had wondered about that too, which it kind of made me Wonder, they claim that it's about the scene, but it's really about sort of one little incestuous group of like three bands that comprised a portion of the scene, right? Because, I mean, Ex Mortis, like you said, Dying Fetus, but Ex Mortis would slot right in with these guys, I felt like. And so that was kind of a glaring omission in mine. And they did get mentioned at one point, but it was just one little, and then that one and done, and then they never came back up.
Well, it seems intentional. Maybe some sour grapes, like this comment on the YouTube thing, was like, yeah, we gave them a show and they didn't trade us a show back. So it just sounds like he's a little bitter. I mean, maybe he has a right to be. I don't know. I don't know any sort of interpersonal communication that happened or any fests or anything they played. Maybe there was some, you know, not necessarily bad blood, but just no blood at all. Just didn't really get along. Didn't really feel the need to incorporate them here. I think it's also probably a little grinding or grating for people who were the progenitors in the scene to have been surpassed by a band like Dying Fetus now, especially if they didn't necessarily like them as people. So John Gallagher won, Deceased zero in that aspect.
One of the things that I have a note here about that I'm remembering is you brought up tape trading. I can't remember if you said it was Owen from Circle of Tone mentioned it in the comments,
yes.
The sort of contemporary tape trading. So King was talking about tape trading, and somebody said that they would peel the stamps off and reuse them. And I said, unless mail worked differently back in the early 90s, don't they cancel stamps? You can't reuse stamps like off of a letter. That doesn't fucking work. So it kind of called that whole thing into question if he was just like talking out of his ass about something that sounded really cult and like, you know, really grassroots, or if that's actually the way that worked.
I got to be honest, I was not old enough to be sending so many letters where money, I was so worried about money that I felt the need to reuse stamps. So I never tried. However, in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, it's not like there were scanners or anything. Who's going to take a look at the stamps and be like, wait a minute, I've seen this stamp before?
Well, no, but when you send a letter, they print ink on top of it. That's the way that, you know, that's what the wavy lines are, is they print on it so that way you can't reuse the stamp. Like, I don't know if maybe that seems like really old school technology, is to just like run a little ink on top of it to make sure it can't be reused. I'm pretty sure that that's the way it was done, because, I mean, there are stamp collectors who have canceled stamps that are rare, but those ones aren't valued as much because you want the ones that are uncanceled. I don't know. I really, that was a big question mark for me. I'm kind of calling bullshit on that here. So
also, I thought it was a fun fact that Deceased was apparently one of the first bands we saw my Relapse Records when they started in the early 90s.
Very cool indeed. Any final thoughts here, gentlemen, about this documentary?
I just want to say
that it stacks up to, sorry, clean edit. How do you think it stacks up to these other documentaries that we've seen that take a deep dive into these various scenes, like Murder in the Front Row or Get Thrashed or Until the Light Takes Us?
I think that this one was really fun. I want to say that I thought it was well made for something that was free on YouTube. I really didn't know what to expect in terms of quality. And, you know, it didn't rely too much on, you know, cheesy Ken Burns Zoom footage. They certainly weren't stretching themselves in terms of content. And so in that, I want to applaud them to say that I think that, you know, this is certainly, as we caveated, a look at a specific group of, again, incestuous friends and bands in a scene. I would have liked to have seen them address potentially some of the, you know, you called it sour grape stool with bands like Ex Mortis and Dying Fetus, who are notable from that area regionally in the metal scene. To make it a little bit more of a comprehensive documentary about everything that comprised of death metal in that time and place. But for what it is, it's a lot of fun. You're going to laugh and, you know, probably wistfully long for the days of metal that I never really experienced too much in my life. So I'm giving it a thumbs up.
I think it's one of the most relatable documentaries I've seen. If there's a criticism that I have, I guess it's not, I shouldn't say criticism, but there's something I noticed about things like Murder in the Front Row and Get Thrashed. It's these bands have a certain level of success. And so there's almost like a level of like worship when it comes to these interviews. Like there's no one coming in here with this Kerry King attitude. It's like, if you're watching this, you know who I am type attitude. Or like, even Until the Light Takes Us is obviously dealing with much more underground bands, but I guess given the mythology surrounding Mayhem and Varg and the murders and the church burnings and all that sort of stuff, it also still feels much less relatable, even if they probably were just those same as those DC metalheads, just with domestic terrorism added in. They were doing the same thing, just, you know, getting pissed drunk and doing dumb teenager shit. Just their dumb teenager shit happened to be a little bit more serious than the dumb teenager shit depicted here. Like, I thought it was not outside the realm of something I'd see in the local metal scenes that I grew up playing in, which I thought was really fun. And I really liked that aspect.
Yeah, I thought overall I enjoyed a lot. I do wish that kind of highlighted some of the other bands like Doomstone or Sadistic Torment, like some of the other bands that weren't Morbius, Deceased, or Abominog. That's my only criticism. May highlight some other like second tier bands. But minus that small caveat, I thought it was very enjoyable and highly recommend it, especially being fucking free on YouTube. So
absolutely can't argue with free. That's going to do it for this latest edition of Hammer of the Underworld. Thank you all so much for listening. The Fundamentalist will be back soon with a reviews pod and our long anticipated Under the Knife, Alice in Chains. With that being said, I'm Dual Guest. Thank you to Richard Donahue and Peter Bog for joining, and we'll talk to you next time.